Good day, and welcome to the Ceres Real Estate PLC September 2020 interim results conference call. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Andrew Coombs. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to today's presentation of Ceres Real Estate's interim results for the period ending 30th of September 2020. My name is Andrew Coombs. I am the Chief Executive Officer for the group, and I'm joined today by Alastair Marks, who is our Group Chief Financial Officer. We will both be taking you through today's presentation, a copy of which is currently available on the Ceres website. To access it, please go to the investors section at the top of the website, click on the drop-down box, and choose results and presentations, and you will see today's presentation at the top of that page. Let me first start by asking you to turn to page three, where I can remind you that Ceres is a German-focused leading operator of mixed-use light industrial business parks on the edge of key German cities. We have a fully integrated operating platform covering 60 different locations throughout Germany. We manage and operate over 1.5 billion euros of German real estate, 80% of which we own on our own balance sheet, with the other 20% being made up of the Titanium joint venture with AXA, as well as some operating and management agreements for third parties. Finally, let me remind you that Ceres is not a REIT, which is why we are able to reinvest 1/3 of our earnings and distribute the other 2/3, which means we have a particularly well-covered and reliable dividend. If I can ask you to turn to page four, maybe we can look at some of the key dynamics regarding Germany. As you all know, unlike certain other geographies, including the U.K., Germany is already fairly well leveled up with several large autonomous markets. These serve a well-diversified economy with various different sub-sectors, including chemical and medical. The German Mittelstand has, over the preceding years, come into its own, with the German SME market or Mittelstand market now accounting for more than 50% of total employment and more than 50% of the total GDP contribution. If we look specifically at the light industrial asset class in Germany, it says in the presentation that the replacement costs are high. I like to look at it in a slightly different way. I think of it as a high-yielding asset class. High yielding for many reasons, but partly because you can access the secondary real estate at highly discounted prices in relation to the replacement cost. Clearly what that means is, from an operator's perspective, there is a huge amount of headroom to be able to layer additional services to your tenants and be able to improve the yield of the property before you max out on the equation whereby the tenant might as well just conduct their own new build and pay higher rents for brand-new buildings. There is an extraordinary opportunity in terms of this asset class, specifically in Germany. In Germany, there is still good liquidity in terms of real estate transactions. Germany is fast becoming a safe haven, in particular for real estate investments. If you look specifically over the preceding months during the COVID-19 crisis, what we've seen in Germany is a particularly well-functioning public health system That's clearly helped by one of the best diagnostic capabilities in Europe, which has resulted in much higher levels of testing and much faster results where that testing is concerned. We've also seen the system of 16 different federal states come into its own in terms of the efficiency with which those states can roll out national initiatives, in particular government funding schemes to help small and large businesses throughout the pandemic. And Germany has a robust social security system, and what that's clearly resulting in at the moment is a much higher level of consumer confidence than we are seeing in certain other parts of Europe. And that is no doubt aided in this second lockdown by the fact that shops in Germany remain open. If we turn to page 5, maybe we can have a look at some of the highlights, because in spite of the challenges of the last few months, there are a number of notable highlights relating to the company's first half performance. For example, our funds from operations have increased by 7.4%. The dividend that is announced today of 1.82 cents is a modest increase of just under 3% compared to same period previous year. As we have continuously updated the market, our cash collections in the period have been just over 97% of all revenues invoiced. We've been successful in achieving a just over 50 million euro uplift in the valuation of the portfolio, which takes the overall portfolio to just over 1.25 billion euros. We have seen stable rent roll. So occupancy levels have come off by just around 1%, but the average rate per square meter has increased, and between the two, roughly compensated. We've seen an increase in inquiries of just over 17%. That is not the market, that is our own efforts. Our marketing tactics have been turned up, and they have delivered a 17% increase in the inquiry ratio versus previous periods. We have, at the end of the period in September, 128 million euros on our balance sheet, with 70 million euros available as firepower for acquisitions in H2. It has so far been a difficult year to transact. However, this is changing. In the first half, the first lockdown, what we saw is people were not allowed on site in order to conduct technical due diligence. What we're seeing now in this second lockdown, which is more than likely going to be extended to at least December 20th, is a much lighter set of lockdown measures. As a result of that, due diligence can be done on site and transactions can continue. And we expect to return to the normal level of acquisitions throughout the second half of this year. And please let's not forget that despite all of this, we have not forgotten about the pressing need to move forward with all things ESG. And we've been successful in upgrading our status in the MSCI ESG rating from A to AA. And we'll talk more about that as we go through the presentation. But for now, please turn to page 6 and let me hand over to Alistair, who will take you through the financials before handing back to me for the summary and Q&A. Thank you. Alistair.
Thanks, Andrew. So I guess given everything that's going on in the world at the moment, we're very happy to report a 62.2 million profit for the year, which is slightly down on last year. And I think comparing to where we were last year, it's very much a story of increasing operating profit and slightly less valuation increases than we saw in the first half of last financial year. So if we focus firstly on the operating profit, and I guess the best measure of that, which is the key driver of our dividend, is FFO. And as Andrew mentioned before, we've seen about a 7.4% increase in the light or in the FFO in the period. That has been driven very much by net operating income increases, which you can see of about $3.7 million, which is about 9.2%. And what I would say about that is that that is pretty much entirely driven by organic growth. There's been very little net acquisition improvements from September 19, and that's mainly because we've lost some income from the $168 million of assets that we put into the JV, as well as the disposal of Weilendorf we did at the start of this financial year. But obviously, we've got some gains from the €120 million of acquisitions we did in the last financial year. But net-net, they roughly offset each other when you look at the two periods. So most of that $3.7 million NOI growth has been organic growth. Now, overheads have gone up slightly. That's a result of inflationary increases plus a few additional costs which are associated with a bigger portfolio, as well as some write-off of income relating to some of the COVID-related or COVID-affected tenants. So that's been the main reason for the increase in the overheads. Most of it is a little bit of inflationary increases, but some of it obviously is one-off because of COVID. But overall, we've got a pretty decent 7.4% increase in the FFO. If we look at the valuation increases and move down to the $33.5 million gain in the P&L, that's driven by a $50 million valuation increase, which I will drill into in more detail later in this presentation, but that's reported at $33.5 million because there's been about $16 million of capex that's occurred in the period. So the $33 million is net of the capex. But overall, $62.2 million we think is a very, very good result considering what's been going on elsewhere in the world. If we flip over to page 7 and on a per share basis, you can see that the $62.2 million equates to about 5.45 cents per share. And from an FFO point of view, the $29.1 million equates to about 2.8 cents per share. And FFO being our key driver of earnings, that annualized is about a 6.7% FFO yield on our NAV and about a 6% FFO yield on the current share price. Now, what we'll see later on in this presentation is that we do have aspirations to grow our FFO quite significantly, and we can see a path through all of the initiatives that we will describe in this presentation to see that FFO growth go in excess of 8 to 8.5% on the current share price over the next 4 years or so. But we will drill into that into more detail later into the presentation. But still earning at around about 6 or 6.5%, based on NAV, we think is quite a positive thing, particularly when you think about the fact that we've got more firepower to acquire assets on the balance sheet. And as Andrew mentioned, the dividend of 1.82 cents is also around about 4 to 4.5% on the share price and NAV, and it is 65% of our FFO, but it is, more importantly, about 1.54 times covered. So that's, as Andrew mentioned, one of the key things about not being a REIT is that we can be flexible in our dividend policy, and the fact that we only pay out 65% of the FFO earnings means that we can deploy the other 35% back into the portfolio to generate more growth. And obviously that's going to be one of the key things for our FFO growth going forward. If you flip over to page 8, just looking at the balance sheet, the key things I'd like to highlight here is very much the strength of the balance sheet. So strength in the fact that we can weather any storm if there was something to come about, but more importantly, the balance sheet is strong enough to be able to support a lot more acquisitive growth going forward. And I think the key metrics that support that is firstly, we've got about €128 million of cash on the balance sheet, which equates to about €112 million of free cash. Our loans outstanding are around about half a billion euros, which when you take out the free cash, the net LTV is about 31.6%, which we think is still very, very conservative. And also, now that our assets are more than 1.2 billion euros of value, there's around about 124 million euros of unencumbered assets across 12 assets that we have on the balance sheet as well. And going forward, when we talk about our firepower, We think there's about 70 million euros of cash we would like to deploy into assets, leaving slightly more than 40 million of free cash on the balance sheet. But all of those assets will be acquired on an unencumbered basis, which is going to increase our unencumbered asset number, which we also think provides a lot more strength into the balance sheet as well. And all of that equates to our net assets in the period increasing from around about 802 million up to 845 million, which when you look on an adjusted basis, taking out the deferred tax and the financial derivatives, is just under 900 million euros. So we've seen about a 5.2% increase in the key NAV per share metrics, 81.54 cents up to 85.81 cents adjusted NAV per share, which has been predominantly driven by those valuation increases of 50 million, which I mentioned before. And as I said, we'll drill into that in a bit more detail later in the presentation. But from an NAV point of view and from a balance sheet point of view, I think we've had a very, very strong result. And I expect that 85.81 cents per share NAV ending number is probably higher than what the market is expecting. And flipping over the page to page 9, we can see how all of that transpires on a per share basis. You can see the 81.54 going up to 85.81 cents on this graph. But the two key things are the recurring profit of 2.73 cents per share and the 50 million valuation gain of 3.22 cents per share. So the sum of those, annualized compared to our starting NAV, equates to about a 14.6% total shareholder return in the first half, annualized. And if you look over the last probably 5 years, 5 or 6 years, we've always exceeded around the 15% mark. So what I would say is that given that we've had a rather challenging environment in the first 6 months, we're still running at about 14.6% annualized total shareholder return, part of which is driven by valuation gains, but obviously a fairly substantial amount is driven by earnings as well. So we think that's actually a very good result in the first period. Flipping over to page 10, just talking a little bit about the Titanium joint venture. As most of you are aware, Titanium is the name for the joint venture that we have with AXA. This is a venture where we are the exclusive asset manager for the venture. And as far as equity participation is concerned, AXA put in about 65% and we put in 35%. And what you will see throughout the presentation and on our balance sheet is that we've grown our equity participation, that 35%, up to around about 52 million euros at this point in time. The assets, we funded the original portfolio with 168 million of assets, which came from our balance sheet, which we sold into the joint venture. We reported that in the middle of 2019. And at the end of last financial year, in March 2020, we acquired the first asset, an asset near Dusseldorf, Hilden, for just under 59 million, which we've added to that. And as you can see, the key differences between assets that we acquire for the joint venture and assets that we acquire for our balance sheet is firstly ticket size. So generally we are focusing on assets that are in excess of 45 million euros for the joint venture. But I guess more importantly, the assets that go into the joint venture are more stable, are more mature, and from an earnings point of view, earn a lot less than what the assets that we would put on our own balance sheet. And that's because AXA have got a lower cost of capital, and they're very keen for us to buy assets that are a lot easier to manage and easier to maintain. And that is where a lot of the demand in the market is at the moment, which is why those type of assets, the bigger assets, the more mature assets, are selling for much lower yields and obviously make much lower returns. And the reason why it works for us in the joint venture is because when we participate to the tune of 35%, and we get our circa 10% returns on our equity, which we expect the assets to earn in the joint venture, then you add on top of that the management fees that we actually earn for managing it, then it tips our 10% returns up to closer to the mark that we would expect to earn on our own balance sheet. So assets alone don't really work too well from a returns point of view, considering the cost of capital of Sirius compared to the cost of capital for AXA. but returns plus management fees tips it into the right area, which is why this joint venture works very well for us, because we are seeing a lot of good opportunities that don't quite make our hurdles, but we would like to participate in. And as you can see, and as we've mentioned, we've now grown the portfolio value within the joint venture up to $235 million as at September 20, and we've got a very strong pipeline to grow that further going forward. But apart from what Titanium is all about, the two key questions that we always get asked about the joint venture is, what does the balance sheet look like, i.e. what are the levels of gearing that we're looking to put into the joint venture? And secondly, how much do we actually earn from our investment into the joint venture? And I'd like to answer those on the next two slides. So if you turn over to slide 11, this deals with the balance sheet element. And what you can see is that on the Sirius balance sheet of around about 845 million euros, just under 800 is our core balance sheet, and around about 50 million is our investment into the joint venture. And our 35% of the joint venture, you can see 82 million of property value, which is 35% of the 235 million, 29.2 million bank debt, which is our 35% of the 84 million bank debt that's sitting within the joint venture. So we're currently running the joint venture with about 33% net LTV, which also factors in the free cash that's sitting within the joint venture as well. So it's similar sorts of LTVs within the joint venture as it is within the Sirius core balance sheet. But given the level, or the more stable nature of the assets and the high quality level of assets, what our plans are is to gear within the joint venture to around about 50%. And we've got a number of banks that are prepared to support on very good terms financing to that kind of level. So the next acquisition that we will put within the joint venture, we will put some financing against Hilden, which currently is sitting on the balance sheet unencumbered, because all of the 84 million of debt within the joint venture is associated with the first assets, and we will run it at around about 50% LTV within the joint venture, which we think is a good level to find that balance between security as well as making good returns within the joint venture. So if you flip over to page 12, we can talk a little bit about the returns that we make on the joint venture. And what you'll see here is the column on the left shows exactly the September 20 run rate. The column on the right will show what the run rate will be once we put that financing against the Hilden asset, i.e. 50% gearing against that Hilden asset. And you can see we've invested 47.4 million of equity into the joint venture. It's in the books at just under 52 million because we've got some profit sitting within the vehicle as well. But our actual investment was 47.4 million. So we're looking at returns on that. And currently our 35% share of profit after tax is earning about 4 million on that investment. We get around about 1.4 million of management fees, which is net of costs, giving us a total income of about 5.4 million, which from a cash on cash point of view, is around about 11.4% we are earning on the 47.4 million we've invested. Once we actually put that extra gearing into the vehicle, the profit will reduce slightly because of the extra interest that we incur on that debt, but the returns on the equity increase to about 14.1%. So if you think about it, the assets themselves are earning around about 10%. But when we actually include management fees on top of what we earn from the assets, it takes it up to around about 14%. So that is the kind of differential we can get from just buying the assets alone compared to buying the assets plus management fees. So hopefully that gives you a lot more color around the balance sheet and also the earnings that we're generating from the joint venture. If you flip over to page 13, I'd like to talk a little bit about our organic rental growth in the period. And as we've sort of talked about, you can see that we started or ended last year with a rent roll of about 90.3 million, and we've ended this financial period with a rent roll of about 89.2 million. If you take out the disposal from the opening position, we're talking about 89.6 million rent roll to 89.2 million. So fairly flat around there. But the key point I would like to mention on that is that obviously the change in the rent roll has been affected by move-outs, which you can see around about 6.7 million euros of move-outs. But what I would say, and we've always talked about our acquisitions in the fact that we do buy a number of assets at a very high yield with a large tenant that we know is going to move out. But we buy the asset anyway because we know that once that tenant moves out, we've got the opportunity to upgrade the space and put in longer-term tenants with higher rents, which is one of the key parts of the asset management strategy on those assets. And what I will say is that within that 6.7 million of move-outs, there's more than 1.7 million euros of income lost, which relates to acquisition assets exactly like that. So we don't really see that as a normal move-out. We see that as space that had a tenant in there but we knew was going to be vacated. So we don't really include that as far as the normal like-for-like comparisons in our own analysis. And if you were to take that out, we would have seen about a 1.5% like-for-like rental growth in the first period, which we think is actually a pretty good result and more representative of the asset management activity that's happened in the period, especially considering when there was a number of months where we couldn't do viewings because of the lockdown. And if you look at how we've replaced that, you can see that some of the move-ins have come in from the CapEx programs, so letting up space that we've invested into, but the most of it is just coming from the lettable space that was sitting vacant at the start of the period. But also, a fairly significant percentage, i.e. 1.8% annualized, is 0.8 million that's coming from uplifts on tenants. And that's not just contractual increases. That also includes tenants that have moved out where we've pushed, moved out that have renewed, but we've pushed the price up on renewal. So getting a 1.8% annualized like-for-like increase on existing tenants, given the fact that inflation has dropped pretty close to zero in the latter part of this first period, we think also is a very good result. So the headline numbers of a flat rent roll is far from the reality, and if you factor in everything I've said, I think you'll see that it's a very good result as far as getting to 89.2 million at the end of the period. Flipping over the page to page 14 on the property valuations. First slide, I'd just like to point out a couple of things on here. Firstly, we've been able to exceed the 1.2 billion mark for the first time. We're now at 1.225 billion euros worth of assets on the balance sheet. We're still valued at relatively conservative yields, 7.3% gross and 6.4% net. As far as yields in the market are concerned, they have not really moved too much considering where they were before the COVID. So this asset class has not been materially affected by anything that's happened in the world. Unlike retail assets or even office assets to a certain degree, the industrial and logistics assets are still going very, very strong in Germany now and as strong as what they were pre-COVID. Capital value-wise, we're at just over 800 euros per square meter, which is still well below the replacement cost. So we think that the 1.2 billion valuation is still relatively conservative, considering where the market is at the moment. And looking at the valuation movements in the year, the table in the bottom left corner, you can see that the main movements have been the disposal, the 10 million asset in Stuttgart that we sold, plus the 50 million valuation increase, which is 34 million surplus above the 16 million of capex. So that is basically the movement from the 1.186 billion we had at March to the 1.225 billion at the end of September. And to drill into that in a bit more detail, if you turn to page 15, we've got the usual slide which separates out the value-add assets from the mature assets. And if you look at the comparisons between the top table and the bottom, it shows what the movements of those has been in the period. And if we start with the mature assets, you can see 496 million euros going up to almost 522 million euros, about a 5.2% increase, which is on the back of around about a 2% or just under a 2% increase in the rent roll. And the beauty of that increase in the rent roll is that all of that has come from rate rather than occupancy. So pushing up the rates, pushing through the inflationary increases and all of that has got a much more substantial impact on the valuation, because we can see that going forward, there's a lot more reversion to come from that portfolio. So I think that's an important point to make, is the fact that even though the mature assets are sitting there with little opportunity as far as vacancy in that's concerned, there's still some reversion sitting within that portfolio, which we're looking to exploit over the next few years. As far as the value-add assets are concerned, they've obviously been affected on a consolidated basis by those large acquisition move-outs. So we have still seen a 3.5% increase in the valuations there, but the rents have actually gone down because of those acquisition move-outs. But if you look going forward, the bottom right-hand side of that corner, I think, is the key thing to note. The bottom right-hand corner of the table, is the key thing to note, is the fact that we've got now 237,000 square meters of vacancy. Now, that's where most of the opportunity when we're talking about FFO growth, organic FFO growth, is going to come from. And within that 237,000 square meters of vacancy, we've got 85,000 square meters, which is going through the CapEx program. So we're looking to invest around about 24 million euros into that space. We're expecting to generate around about 7.2 million additional rent roll. But more so this period in the past, that in addition to that 84,000 square meters that's going through the CapEx program, we've also got around about 120,000 square meters of space that's ready to let, which we will also expect to let up a good portion of that going forward as well. So 6% of the vacancy, CapEx program, 8% of the vacancy is lettable space, which we would hope that vacancy reduces going forward, leaving only 2% structural vacancy, which for a portfolio like ours, and we say this quite often, is a very, very low number, which means that we can pretty much extract almost every bit of value that is possible within these assets. But in addition to the vacancy, as I mentioned to you on the mature assets, there is still a lot of reversion. So when we do get space back, we are always looking for ways to invest into that space, upgrade that space, turn 2 and 3 euros per square meter space into 4, 5 and 6 euros per square meter space, because that is as good as, from a valuation point of view and from an earnings point of view, earnings growth point of view, that's as good as investing into suboptimal vacancy. And flipping over to page 16, the last thing I would say on the valuations is we've got two tables here on page 16. One shows the movement in the last 6 months, but the bottom one shows the movement in the last 12 months. So the reason we wanted to show the two is because if you just looked at the last six in isolation, and you consider the fact that on the rent roll we've had those 1.75 million of acquisition move outs, it would sort of seem that most of the valuation increase has come from yield shift rather than rent roll growth, which we don't think is the correct story. So that's why we put in the last 12 months, because at March 20, we believe that the valuers were quite conservative because of that material uncertainty clause. So we didn't get the full benefit of the big rent roll increases that we had in the last half of last financial year. So if you look at it, the like-for-like portfolio on the bottom table for the last 12 months, you can see that almost two-thirds of the increases is coming from rent increase, and a third is coming from yield shift. And we think that is more representative of what's happened with the portfolio over the last 12 months. So I just thought we'd put that slide in there just to sort of reiterate that point, but we believe that that's the story behind the valuation increases. Flipping over to page 17. As you've heard, I think, from the Capital Markets Day we did a while ago, and also in most presentations we've done since, we have got an FFO growth ambition to get to 100 million euros. We get a lot of questions about that as to how we're expecting to do that, which is why we thought we'd sort of illustrate that a little bit more detail on the slide on page 17. And as you will see on this slide, 58.2 million is effectively the 29.1 million 6 months run rate multiplied by two. What we do have on the balance sheet is around about 70 million acquisitions firepower, and looking at the pipeline that we've got in place, we're expecting to earn around about a 4.7% EPRA net yield on those from day one, so 3.3 million FFO from day one, which indicates that there's going to be quite a bit of value add potential within that portfolio. But also within the CapEx programs, you can see, I mentioned 7.2 million coming from the CapEx program. 4.2 million is from the acquisitions CapEx program, and 2.9 million is coming from space that we've recently received back, which we're going to invest into and re-let. 5 million is going to come from uplifts, which is around about the 1.8% per year, which we talked about when we looked at the organic rental growth. And then 7 million will come from additional asset management activities. And all of this is over the next four financial years. So that 7 million is going to come from that 120,000 square meters of other lettable vacancy. It's going to come from upgrading vacant space, suboptimal vacant space that we receive back, and reversion within the portfolio. It's going to come from improving the service charge recoveries, as well as improving the other revenue streams, including the joint venture revenue stream and conferencing and IT and telco and that kind of stuff. So we can see a very clear path over the next 4 years to grow FFO organically from 58 million up to in excess of 80 million euros. And then the last circa 20 will come from a combination of asset recycling, as well as acquiring other asset acquisition opportunities with new capital, either equity or debt, combination of the both. But up to over 80 million, clear path with everything that we've actually got. From 80 million to 100 million will come from recycling and adding to the portfolio. But all of it is within our sights, and all of it, if you look at it on a per share basis, we can see a way of getting the FFO per share up by sort of 45 to 50% over the next 4 to 4.5 financial years. So hopefully that gives you a bit more color as to how we're expecting to grow our FFO over the next few years. And we think if we can get to that 100 million, it'll get us to a very, very good place, both on a total FFO basis, but also on a FFO per share basis. And flipping over to page 18, you can see that the one thing that makes this FFO growth possible is the strength of our balance sheet. So the key things I've covered when we went through the balance sheet, but the unencumbered assets are crucial because of the fact that they give us much more flexibility in our secured debt, enabled to for recycling and all of that kind of stuff. Having unencumbered assets is a very important part in being able to deal with the banks. 112 million of free cash gives us 70 million of acquisition firepower, which we can go out tomorrow and buy. And high NOI and EBITDA interest cover also gives us lots of breathing room as far as the banks are concerned, but also generating lots of cash, which obviously is going to go straight through to dividends. And with LTVs of circa 32%, means that if we do want to increase borrowings to help fund acquisitive growth, then we've got plenty of room there, particularly considering that when we're investing into the portfolio, we will continue to grow the value of the portfolio as well. So a strong balance sheet is crucial as far as our FFO growth ambitions are concerned. And you can see everything on the right-hand side is what we're planning to do, which feeds in quite well to the FFO growth slide, which I've just presented. And finally, flipping over to page 19, I'll talk a little bit about our banking. And there isn't too much to talk about on the banking so far, or for this period, in the fact that the only real activity was the drawdown of the 20 million extra on the Schuldschein. But sitting with 500 million euros of debt at the end of September, we've still got about 3 years weighted average debt expiry left on there, and our average cost of debt is around about 1.5%. So it's a very, very good position, we believe, with a 32% net LTV. It's a very good position as far as our banking is concerned. But the key thing to note as well is that of the 500 million, 90% is secured, and and 10% is unsecured. And we're always just looking at ways of optimizing the banking, improving the cost of debt, improving the flexibility and all of that. And maybe that's one thing, one dynamic that may change going forward, is that secured and unsecured percentage. Because we are always talking with potential financiers on both secured and also on an unsecured basis. But overall, I think our banking is very strong, and it's going to be one of the key things that will support our growth going forward. So that's it from me. I'll pass back to Andrew to go through the rest of the presentation.
Alistair, thank you very much. We're into the last two slides of the presentation now, the outlook on page 20 and then the conclusion on page 21. And then we'll take some Q&A. But if I can ask you to turn to page 20, the key point here is that the lockdown in Germany is much, much lighter than either the first lockdown or anything that we're experiencing in the UK. Offices are more occupied, people are operating from our sites, shops are open, hairdressers are open. It is a completely different situation to the situation back in April and May of this year. That said, this is going to be lighter but longer. I suspect that Merkel's government will announce on Thursday a decision that will be made this Wednesday, which is to extend the lockdown in Germany until December the 20th. We do not anticipate that that will cause any change in Sirius compared to the way in which we have operated over previous months, and in particular, the way in which we operated through September and October. So we're expecting that, and it doesn't cause any disturbance to our current method of working. We will continue to work closely with our tenants and actively manage them through the crisis. We've established a method of working which is COVID compliant. 90% of our staff on the business parks are there on the business parks and working completely from the business park. Inquiries and viewings are at normal levels, albeit that we've had to employ different tactics to get us there. But these are tactics that we always plan to use in a difficult situation. Those of you who've come to Berlin would have seen the tour of marketing, and we would have explained that what we do is we measure how many maximum inquiries we can get in a month, and then we strip back to the 50th centile, so that normally we're operating at just over 1,000 inquiries, and it's half of what we can attract. And we do that so that in the bad times, even if the market reduces in size, we can turn up our tactics and still maintain our inquiry level. And that's been borne out by the fact that we've done exactly that over this period. In fact, what those marketing tactics have delivered is a 17% increase in the normal inquiry flow. And unlike the first lockdown, technical due diligence can continue. People can go onto sites. So therefore, we would expect that our acquisition activity would pick up in H2. And that's borne out by the fact that we have a strong pipeline of over 100 million euros of assets that are either notarized or in exclusivity. If we can now turn to page 21 in order to conclude, we think that this 6 months has been reasonably successful against the backdrop of the pandemic. As Alistair explained, we continue to have a strong balance sheet. We have stable rent roll. And in spite of everything that's been happening, we have managed to find time for our ESG responsibilities, and I'm pleased to tell you that we have increased our MSCI ESG rating from A to AA. We have been able to grow earnings by 8%, FFO by 7.4%, increase valuations, been successful in collecting our cash, and we remain confident in the resilience of the German economy, as well as the resilience of the Sirius business model, together with the strength of our operating platform, to continue to deliver attractive double-digit returns for our shareholders throughout H2. Thank you very much indeed for your time and attention today. Maybe Alistair and I can now answer some of the questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question at this time, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please make sure the mute function on your phone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, it is star 1 to ask a question. We will pause for just a moment to allow you an opportunity to signal for a question. The first question comes from James Carswell from Peel Hunt. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for the presentation. Just a quick question in terms of, I know your comments about yield compression, the fact that the March kind of valuation, obviously there's a lot of uncertainty. Could you just give us a bit of an update in terms of what you're seeing in the market, both in terms of when you're in the marketing for acquisitions and how you're finding those acquisition opportunities, and also what you're seeing third-party transactions with regard to read across your own yields and potential further yield compression?
Yeah, certainly. Thank you, James. Look, I would say that the market at the moment, the gross yield in the market is probably somewhere in the early to mid sixes. But what we have seen over the last 6 or 7 months is whilst we've seen less transactions, we've seen transactions going through at gross yields of sort of 5.5%. Now, we weren't seeing that last year. We weren't seeing a market being made at sub 6%. We are now seeing a market being made at sub 6%. We're not seeing that reflected in anybody's valuation yet, but we're seeing it reflected in some anecdotal transactions. I'll give you one example. So we have a site, we have two sites actually in Mahlsdorf, just on the east of Berlin. A third site that was up until recently owned by DIC transacted earlier this year at below 5.5%. It transacted, I think, to a Korean pension fund. That is just one of several transactions that we are seeing in the market that is making a sub 6% market. And, you know, that makes me believe that this market has got a lot more legs in it. You know, it feels like the direction of travel continues to be tightening yield. And it'll be very, very interesting to see what happens over the next 6 months because, you know, it remains to be seen whether this pandemic has actually increased the attractiveness of this asset class. My feeling is that it probably has. And I think that we are going to see yield compression driven by a number of different factors, but it definitely feels like there are more legs left in this market. In terms of, you know, our transactions, we're obviously looking, you know, to find things that are off market. We love to find stuff that's got distress in it. So even if there isn't distress in the market as a whole, you know, it doesn't hurt to find the odd transaction that's experiencing a little bit of distress. But generally, we are fighting to get things off market and, you know, achieve modest discounts. Yes, we will come across the odd, you know, deal that reflects distress in the transaction and therefore we're able to be reasonably opportunistic. But generally, I think what you will see is us continue to pick up assets at sort of modest 10% or so discounts to, the general market. Market rates.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
We will now move to our next question from Keir Close from Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I've got just three quick questions for me. Could you indicate what was the cash collection rate of Sirius top 10 or top 50 tenants? Just curious if this was different compared to the total portfolio, to all tenants. Secondly, a question on page 14 of the presentation. We had about 4.2 million adjustments from the appraiser because of lease incentives. Was it for new leases or for some adjustments on existing leases when you grant some tenants some help? And last question would be, could you indicate how the valuation or what was the valuation for the assets in the JV, and how does this compare to Sirius, possibly more mature assets? How does this compare to the valuation of Sirius mature assets?
Thank you, Kai, as ever, particularly incisive questions. Alistair, perhaps you could take question two and three, and maybe we could perhaps do question one together, because I must admit, I don't know off the top of my head the answer to the top 10 and the top 50, but we can easily do it. Alistair, I don't think we've got anybody in the top 10 where rental is concerned that have got any, you know, any deficit, have we? Can you think of any top 10 customer who's not paying their rent?
I think you hit the nail on the head with rental, because, yeah, as far as rents are concerned, the tenants that aren't paying are definitely not in the top 10 or top 50. We've got some service charge balancings outstanding with those from prior years, but that's more questions rather than not being able to pay. But top 10, top 50, I don't think. It's very little that's not collected.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Alistair, do you want to take the second and third question?
Yes, the lease incentives are rent freeze, basically. So you can see there's about 4.2 million of rent freeze, which are accrued, which we will spread over the length of those leases. And the movements in the period are on some of the new leases where we've given some additional rent freeze, nothing more than normal, within the period. So that is pretty much business as usual and hasn't really been affected by COVID.
Right.
And secondly, as far as the valuation of the JV assets are concerned, on slide 11, we do paint that picture so you can see that 235 million is the value. So we can see 82.3 million is our 35% share. But the key metrics at the bottom of that table are for the full portfolio of assets. So six assets, 87% occupancy. That occupancy has dropped a bit because of Hilden, which we bought at 72%. But the rent roll of 14.7 gives a gross yield of 6.3% with an average rate of 6.24 per square meter. So that is across the whole of the JV assets. So that is pretty much the color of the valuations of those assets.
Thank you very much indeed.
Okay.
As a reminder, to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1. Our next question comes from Matthew Saperia from Peel Hunt. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, Andrew. Good morning, Alistair. Slightly more top-down question from me, if I may. Just interested to understand the competitive landscape. You've obviously had a good period in terms of the growth in inquiries and a high conversion rate. Do you think that you're taking competition away from others, or is it just evenly spread across the piece?
No, we know we're taking competition away from others. Let me just give you an example. In the initial lockdown, we kept our storage business open. Others closed theirs. So we basically just, we were the only show in town for about 6 weeks. There are other examples whereby, for different reasons, you know, we've hit certain sort of USPs that other people are not offering, and we've managed to attract customers as a result of that. So, you know, we are definitely, what's happening with a lot of other operators is they're accepting that the market's closed, they can't do anything. We've tended to be a lot more restless and, dare I say, opportunistic. You know, we are continually looking for how we can pivot and change to make sure that we, you know, rather than accept that our trading is going to go backwards, look for opportunities to move it forward. And it's a different mindset, different mentality. And we're lucky because, you know, we've got the internal resources, not least of which is the marketing area, to see those opportunities. And we've got the national sales force, which is operating on site in 90% of cases, to then be able to do something about it. So we are definitely taking things from others rather than just sort of, you know, tracking the market.
Thank you. Thanks, Andrew.
And our next question comes from Nicholas Lyle from Stanleap. Please go ahead.
Well, hi, gents. I'm just wondering if this economic slowdown has changed your view at all of what you would consider a core asset in the portfolio, either by type or by geography, regardless of the sort of value add or mature property, but how you're thinking about geography within Germany or asset type after the pandemic.
Look, it hasn't changed our view of geography. We are typically around the 7 key autonomous areas in Germany, plus a couple of border plays. So it doesn't change the view of geography. If anything, it probably changes our view of what we convert the space into. So, what we're looking at very, very closely now, what are the emerging trends? How are people behaving? What are the, products, be they storage products or be they other products, that by building more of those, we can drive our pricing up and we can attract more of the demand in the market. And again, this is where we're fortunate, because we've got clear line of sight into the market, because we can see the words people are using in terms of their inquiries, because we have, the national sales force talking to people on a daily basis and putting the information into our CRM system, we've got actionable data that we can use to make decisions that is bottom up from our clear line of sight in the market, to start adapting product and making sure, rather than trying to push the old world onto the new world, what we're doing is seeing the new world and we're aligning ourselves to it. So it's less about what we buy, it's more about what we do inside of what we own.
Well, that's clear, thanks. And what about in terms of your IRR decisions on disposals?
Alistair, I don't think they've really changed to you. I think we've still got the same IRR hurdles, both on purchase and disposal.
Okay. Yeah, we were hoping that the acquisition opportunities, we could increase our IRR expectations quite substantially, but the market hasn't really moved too much, and all of the stuff that we were looking at pre-COVID that we'd hoped we'd pick up for much cheaper post is selling for the same sort of prices as before. So everything is pretty much as it was before. But obviously the key thing for us is the differential between IRRs of disposals and differentials with acquisitions. We obviously want to see quite a substantial uptick when it comes to recycling.
Of course, okay. Great, thank you.
And there are currently no further questions in the queue.
Thank you, everybody, very much indeed for your time and attention this morning. And for those of you shareholders, thank you very much indeed for your support.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.